This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Ocean.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. Jude Feld, you know him. He's the pontiff of the pick four. Our producer, Lee Delapina, with you here this evening, and we do want to extend a special welcome to everybody just joining us coast to coast on Sirius Channel 93, and of course, all of you who have been with us for the past 3 hours on XM 209 with our live racing coverage. Welcome back to the show, and welcome to another outstanding edition of Trainer Talk, all presented by our friends at Fasic Tipton. And JT, believe it or not, we are actually coming up on the one-year anniversary of Trainer Talk. You remember it was last September, the end of September, when we went to Santa Anita, and we had a chance to visit with Ron Ellis out at Santa Anita for the full hour, and that was right around the Breeders' Cup preview day. We're going to be out there again on September 28th. 2 weeks away from the one-year anniversary of this program, and we have to say it has been just a complete delight to visit with all the trainers over the past year.
Yeah, it's been so much fun. You never know what you're going to hear or what great stories the trainers have to tell, and one thing's for sure, it's become a very, very popular show. I was out at the Keeneland sale, and people were telling me how much they enjoyed it and learning about the trainers. You know, you see their name in the form or in the program, and you don't really know anything about them. You know, their horse has a chance or maybe doesn't have a chance, but you don't know anything about their life or what their philosophies are. And this is a chance for fans and aficionados to learn about the trainers and their lives. And even the trainers listen to catch up on one another, yeah, see what the scoop is.
The show that trainers listen to, and we're going to have a couple of outstanding guests for you here this evening. Gary Hartledge is going to be here in the first half of the program to tell us his story. He will be followed in the second half by Andrew McKeever. So without further ado, let's get right to it. Gary is on the line. He was born, of course, in Louisville, Kentucky, still resides in the Derby City, and the 66-year-old has saddled 629 winners to date. His runners have earned more than $13 million in purses. And Gary, nice enough to spend some time with us here tonight on Trainer Talk. Gary, thanks for taking the time.
You bet. Glad to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you with us. And congratulations on those 629 winners. It's been quite a ride for you. Take us back to the beginning and tell us how Gary Hartledge ended up becoming a horse racing trainer.
It goes way back. I went to the track with my dad. My dad was a David $2 better, and I was a tag along, and then I just, when I was like 10 or 11, right in that age, 12, I started hopping the backside fence at Churchill Downs, and I just, from there on, it was go. You know, I kind of most of the time, that's all I wanted to ever be. So, you know, it worked out. It took me a while, but I got there. So, and I'm not no real big trainer or nothing, but I do good, and I've made it for, you know, the last 40 years, so, and it's something I love to do. I get up every morning loving it, so I hope I'm here for another 20.
Well, we hear that same thing from a lot of trainers on the program. Gary, how old were you when you first started going to the races with your dad?
Oh, I was probably, in Kentucky, you could go when you was real little, so, you know, I was going when I was 6 and 7 years old with my dad to the track. So it was like an everyday thing, you know. When Churchill Downs was in town, that's where we was at. So he got a race with my dad at night instead of my school books, but it was pretty, you know. I was real young, you know, and I just carried that one. You know, in my high school yearbook, that's what I wanted to be. And like I said, I got on and off a little bit because it didn't work out. I was a job agent for a year after I come back from the service. And then I just kind of got away, and then I got in again. And always, that was where my heart was always at. And then after I had my daughter Jennifer, which she's involved with the horses now, and like in 74, and then after she was about 4 years old, I said, heck with it, I'm gone. I'm going to go, and I'm going to make it, and that's what I'm going to do. So I've been pretty, you know, I've been on it since 74 all the way. I think it was 74, 76, somewhere around there. But it's been, I know she turned one, okay, it was 75. She turned one in Hot Springs. That's when my daughter turned one in Hot Springs. So I've been going at it since then. And, you know, it's been up and down, the ups and downs, good. I had a real good run for 8 or 9 years when I had about 34 horses, and it kind of tapered down. And I got down to like 12, 14. I even got down to 6 last year at one time. Now I'm carrying about 12 or 14, but I'm really happy, like when I got 12 or 14 horses, because, you know, I got everything right in my own hands. And with the stock that I got right now, with having Anita Colley behind me, and I bought a couple 2-year-olds. It's really enjoyable. I mean, I got a pretty good stable right now.
Talk about the ups and downs and how hard it is when you're a small trainer, when things aren't going your way. I mean, sometimes you get in your head that you're never going to get out of this mess. Talk about that a little bit.
You start thinking. I mean, you know, it ain't nothing. It sounds easy, but I mean, it's not nothing to get on a streak where you lose 30 or 35 races in a row. And then you start thinking, what am I doing different? What do I do? And over the years, you find out, you just stay where you're at, stay your own course, do what you know best, and it'll work out. And it does. I guess that's why I'm here that long. You know, to be in it that long, you can't change what you're doing. You just keep your own personality. Whatever you are, that's what you are, and whatever horses you got, that's what you got. You know, you like to have good horses all the time, but that don't happen. You know, especially when you got a small stable. And I've been very fortunate for the last 5 or 6 years to have a real good stable, mainly because one mare that Anita kept in sale, which was Ornate, and now it seems like all the horses from her are just starting to really, you know, I got about 3 or 4 brood mares out of her, and it looks like it's going to really, I might be here a while.
Gary, you said that you knew this was what you always wanted to do, even going back to your high school yearbook, and you mentioned spending a little time as a jocks agent, but why a horse trainer? Why did you settle on this profession?
I know, why did somebody become a priest? You know, I think it was something that was meant to be a long time ago, because I have never wanted to be nothing else but what I am right now. So I just think it was kind of, that was what I was supposed to be. At least, I mean, you know, I've never even thought of wanting to be anything. I've tried other things, don't get me wrong. I made golf clubs for 2 years. I rode whiskey barrels. But all the time when I was in there, the whole time I couldn't wait to get out of there or catch a ticket so I could get out of there. So, I mean, you know, it's just something, it was something that was kind of glued in me from the time I was 6 or 7 years old. So, you know, I remember when the first time I left home, my mom says, I don't like it, but if that's what you want to do, you go do it, and do it right. And I took off. I went to Finger Lakes right out of high school, and when the first year Finger Lakes opened, you know, I was making $35 a week, and I just, from there on, you know, and I went to New Orleans when I was like 17, and I went to Sunshine Park when I was 18, and then I got drafted into the service, and I went to Vietnam, and come back out of there, and then I said, well, I'm going to jump on there, and I was Walter Bender's jocks agent. Walter's a real good friend of mine, always has, and he trains horses now, too, and I took his book for about a year, and that didn't work out, so I started training again, and I met my first wife, and I worked in a chemical factory for a while, for like 2 years. And then I got off of that and got back on the track a little bit. And then my daughter was born, and I jumped off for like 4 or 5 years. And then I just said, I know where I belong, and that's what I got to do. I got to make up my mind. So, you know, when I did that, and that's where I'm at right now.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. And Did I hear you say that you made golf clubs for 2 years?
Yeah, I did a little golf. I worked a little golf. I had a real good friend of mine, which he's deceased now, but he he started Louisville Golf Club, making golf clubs here in Louisville, and I went and worked for them when my daughter was a little, when she was real little, a year or two old. And, you know, when I tried to make it through that, but it didn't last. You know, I got back on track. Now I got back off one other time, like two more years, and then I kind of just sailed on. When she turned like 4 or 5 years old, I just turned myself loose enough, committed myself. That's what I was going to do. That's what I did.
Can you design a set that will keep my ball in the fairway?
Yeah, I like to play golf, but I ain't no good. I like it's my best pastime. I got is golf, I would say.
Mike's no good either. talk about your path and maybe you know, some of the guys you work for and how you learned your craft.
You know, you couldn't put it on one person, because I was a kind of a hit and miss when I probably worked for 15 different trainers. But, you know, like Donnie Grego, which is a real good friend of mine, we grew up like we was, you know, jumping the fences at 12 and 13 together. We always went together, and he worked for Al Clifford back in them days, was a real great trainer, and he got away from him and started out, and I went worked with him for a while, you know. And then I met up with Lyle Whiting, which, you know, is Lynn Whiting's dad. And I probably, by far, Lyle Whiting was the, you know, he was something different than anybody else. I mean, I learned a lot from him just by being around him. He was a real quiet, but you had to watch him with this. He knew what a horse was. I'd say Lyle Whiting was, I learned more from Lyle Whiting than I did anybody, you know. But I've worked for other real trainers that treated me great, and I never went to work for too many big outfits because I didn't want to be lost in the fiddle, or I want to be in on everything. So I kind of self-taught myself, but I didn't, you know, I was always watching and always looking and seeing what was going on. And of all the people I worked for, Lyle Whiting was, you know, and you know where Lynn's at today. Lynn's won the Derby. There's been a lot of people that's worked under Lyle that's done it. So I couldn't put it on no one person, but I learned more from him just by watching him and what he did. And I put it into my, you know, to what I do today is a lot of what he used to do. So, you know, you could say he was, of all my mentors, he would be the one.
Well, he was a great trainer. Obviously, you've finally decided to make the break and go on your own. Was your first victory?
My first victory was it was at Turfway Park. I claimed the horse for $2,500. And then when I got him out of jail, I ran him back for $2,500, and he went, and they took him back. So I didn't have him very long, but I went with him, you know, I went with him with the other guy out of jail. So it was Dean's Jewel was the horse's name. And that's been a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you that date right now. I should think I would know that date, but I don't know that.
Talking with trainer Gary Hartledge on Trainer Talk presented by Fakes at Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Gary, a lot of people around the racetrack will have nicknames. They call you Red Dog. Where did that come from?
That's a good story. If you knew back, Tommy Cotton was rest of so he just died last week. He had a stable there, and I was working with somebody right there next door. Him and me and Grego and Donnie Grego was. Reason my horse, I had a horse named Kentucky Moonshine, and he had Ray Jet. That's when that was the horse that ran the Derby back then, was Ray Jet. And I breezed with one of his horses, and my horse got beat about an eighth of a mile. And they come back to the track, and Marty Freed, which is a jockey then, he was on my horse, and Donnie Grego was on the other horse. And Marty Freed said, oh, this is a dog, man. This is a dog. And my buddy Greg, he just picks up and he started calling me Red Dog from then on. That's how I picked it up. It was, it, you know, it was, I had, I had a real cheap horse and real, and he wasn't much count, but that's kind of how I got, and it stuck with me. You know, it's just stuck with me ever since.
Well, you obviously have a good sense of humor about it, and when somebody's taking a tour of the barn area, Churchill Downs, Derby Week, or whatever, they'll see your sign with the big red dog on it. So,
yeah, I'd say more people know me as Red Dog than they do Gary Harvey.
Hey, Gary, you mentioned that you have a smaller type of operation. You're very comfortable with that. And for somebody who hasn't had big stables, you've had some pretty nice horses come through your care. There's been High Heels. There's been French Kiss, Judge TC, On Fire Baby. Talk about some of the horses that you've been fortunate to be around that have really kind of captured you.
Yeah, I have. You know, Robert and B. Roberts had, you know, we jumped up pretty good. And that was when I was the biggest I was. I carried about 35 horses. I had ups and downs horses then for Alex Rankin and them. And I had pretty good stables. I had a pretty big stable back then. Country kept on getting bigger and bigger, and you know, I really didn't want to split up, so then they went to Stanley Huff, which was no big deal. It just, that's the way I was. But Country really did good and gave me some decent horses and some good horses. I mean, we claimed Judge TC. We claimed him for $30,000. You know, he's still the highest earner I got. He made like 800 and something thousand. And then there was, you know, a nice serve. I had nice serve, which she was a real good filly. I had her. She went about four stakes. And then I had the Rankins for Packet. You know, Packet went three stakes in the spring meet here, which I don't know if any other 3-year-old filly's done that. She went three stakes here at Churchill, which was about 20 years ago. I've been very fortunate to have some good horses, and now I've got. With Anita, it started out with High Heels, which was Ornate's first foe, and it's kind of just snowballed into, it seems like every year we got a good horse. You know, we had High Heels, and then after High Heels came French Kiss, and now French Kiss, now we got On For A Baby, which she's only four, but I've said since the third day I had her, she's the best horse I've ever had in my barn, and I still believe that. And she'll probably prove that out for the next year. She's hopefully, knock on wood, she stays sound and we can run her a couple more years, because I think Anita's willing to do that as long as she stays sound and everything, and she is sound as this day. So everything's, you know, it's kind of, we had a good row. You know, when you got a good horse in the barn, I don't care if you got 35 horses or if you got four horses, and once you've ever had that taste of having a good horse, and you don't have it in there, it's a real big blank. And, you know, when you walk out of the house in the morning and you know you got a horse like that in the barn, it's a real easy to take steps, you know? You kind of float in the morning. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love $5,000 horses, but this is just an extra zip in your life when you got one of them big horses in the barn. And any trainer will tell you that. It's just, it adds something to you, it puts icing on the cake, you know? It makes it a real good, I mean, it gives you something extra to go for every day.
Yeah, no, not only for you, but for your help as well. I mean, when there is a big horse
all
in the
right.
barn,
always from the jock to the, you know, from the jockey to the help. You know, my help's been with me. I've been very fortunate. You know, jockey Joe Johnson's been with me for 25 years. He started with me when he just come on with a hot walker, and he's still riding for me today, and that was 26 years ago. As a matter of fact, he came to work for me on my 40th birthday. So that was, and he's been with me ever since. And I've got my assistant trainer with Sam Felpott who's been with me forever. And I've got every groom I got, except, you know, I've only got three grooms. And it's a husband and wife and their daughter. It's a husband and wife and their daughter were ups for me. And I got two hot walkers that's been with me for, one of them's been with me for 20-something years, and the other one's been with me for 12 or 13 years. So, and I got one other hot walker, too. It just started last year. So it's a pretty – we all get along good. It's a kind of a – we all love what we're doing, and you can't beat that. You know, it's hard to find this day. It's really hard to find that day when you can get that many people to be in one spot that good together. So
and
we enjoy it.
Gary, you talked about having your daughter, Jennifer, involved in the operation as well. What's her role and how rewarding is it for you to be able to go to work with her every day?
Well, to be honest with you, Jennifer's not on the racetrack.
Okay.
She's married, just had a kid about 6 months ago, and she works at a place where I worked at when I first got out of the Army. She works at a chemical plant where I worked there, and she's got a real good job there. But she manages a stable. She manages 10 Grand Stable, which was a group of like 18 people that put up money in Seneca, and we bought two 2-year-olds last year. And they both turned out to be pretty nice. They've not won, but they've had fast. Well, I ran both in a stake at Churchill this last weekend. One of them was fifth, and another was seventh. But they've been like 3 seconds and a third before they ran in there. So you know they're decent horses. And you know she's been on it. My brother and my sisters have been on syndicate horses and started syndicate horses that we've had around. We have a pretty good following here. They know when we win a race. we kind of take it over to the barn afterwards. We kind of party a little bit. So it's a real sociable thing around my barn. And even Anita, my biggest client, you know, she even throws the party sometimes for them. She's a super, super person and a great owner. And everybody gets along. You know, it ain't like nobody, you know, if one of our horses went in the barn, everybody's in the pictures. Always a ton of people in the picture. So everybody gets along good from, you know, the bottom owner to the top owner. Everybody gets along good. So it's really, it makes my day a whole lot better, you know. It makes it a lot easier for me. But we enjoy it.
Yeah, it sure takes the pressure off when the clients are all happy and get along good. You don't have any of that jealousy and stuff that happens a lot sometimes in bigger barns, people vying for attention. But when you have a smaller barn, you have that personal touch with people, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, and believe me, when On Fire Baby wins, you know, all Shavley. I mean, Shavley and Hot Springs, because in Hot Springs is my home away from home. I live, you know, I'm there. I leave Louisville December 1st, and I go to Hot Springs till April 15th, and I got so many friends at Hot Springs as I do here. I mean, it's just it's very rewarding to have that many people enjoy what you're doing, and they get so much out of it too, along with us. So you know, it really it's good for everybody.
Gary, you referenced your owner Anita Colley a few times here over the past 15 or 20 minutes or so. Talk about that relationship and how that came about.
Well, her husband, which is he's deceased. He died about 10 years ago. Barry Ebert, her first cousin. I started training for them. I went to Derby trial in like 86, 87 with Savings, and he brought a horse to me, and I've had a horse for them ever since then. And then. You know, I'd get up to maybe 2 or 3 and then go down to 1 or something. And then when Barry died, I mean, it was sitting there for Anita either to take it or do whatever, you know, or quit the horse game. And she decided, boom, she was going to go. She said, I'm going to go with this and see if I can take the horse game too. And she took it. And I'll tell you what, boy, oh boy, it's great. I mean, she had Ornate. Because Ornate won a stake like the last year or two that Barry was alive. Ornate won a stake. And then I know Barry got he's the one that set up the breeding rights for Ornate on eDubai. And when they was, and then Anita put him in the sale. She put him in the sale and put a pretty high reserve on because she wanted him to go to a good home if it come. And it missed by $5,000. So she kept her. And she's, and all the rest is what it is, you know. There's 3 stakes winners. 2 of them are graded, you know. The grade 1 stakes winner, everyone's grade 2 stakes winner, and everyone's win almost $300,000. And she's had a couple of them in between, which I've got now. I mean, what a row, you know, what a ride. And she, you know, she's been married again now for like 5 or 6 years, and it's everybody's, she's just took it on, and she enjoys it. She's here when she lives in Louisville now. She lived in Indianapolis, and she moved to Louisville so she could be with the horses more. And she bought a place here, and she loves the horses. She loves everybody around it. She's probably, I don't know how a person could get a better owner. I mean, you know, she loves the horses. It's the horses is number one, no matter what. You know, if they don't run for 60 days, she don't get mad at me. You know, everything's good. It's all for the horse, you know, and she'll tell me what she thinks, and I'll tell her what I think, and we've had a really great relationship. And it really makes my job, I mean, just really, really easy when you got somebody like that. So,
well, Gary,
you know, I've still got a lot of good owners, don't get me wrong, but she's helped me so much in my career. It's just, you know, I guess that's why you hear me say her name a lot, because she's just a, she's one super person.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a perfect fit. And obviously you have a passion for this game, Gary. It's easy to see when we hear your story and hear some of the ways that you got into the game. And we want to thank you for being with us here tonight. All of our guests who appear on Trainer Talk receive a gift from our sponsors, EPO Equine and Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So we'll send those to you. And again, can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us tonight. We could have spent another half an hour easy, so we'll have to have you back on up the road.
Okay. Nice being with y'all.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Gary. Gary Hartledge, our special guest in the first half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nice guy.
Yeah, great story. Tell he loves his horses.
Another person who loves his horses is trainer Andrew McKeever, and he's on deck for the second half of Trainer Talk tonight. We'll visit with Andrew coming up next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Fasic Tipton welcomes nominations now for the November sale, the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. 15 horses in 2012 sold for $1 million and higher, more than any other mixed sale in the world. Exceptional weanling market, with foals selling for up to $620,000. Horse of the Year Hufford de Grace sold for $10 million, the world's highest priced auction thoroughbred of 2012. The November sale at Fasic Tipton in Kentucky. Nominate now.
Now you can help your equine athlete heal faster and recover stronger with Ultras Elite, a wearable low-intensity therapeutic ultrasound system that has been used successfully to treat splints, suspensory ligament and tendon injuries, muscle strains, stiff joints, and bone fractures. Ultras Elite is clinically proven to reduce swelling and inflammation, increase joint flexibility, and reduce pain and irritation. For more information, visit ultras.com. Ultras, heal faster, recover stronger.
EPO Equine, the all-natural, healthy, safe, and legal blood builder, would like to extend a special congratulations to Nick and Martha Gonzalez and the entire team of this year's Queen's Plate winner, Midnight Aria, as well as Tony Alanya and all the connections of the remarkable Captain Treacherous, winner of the Metro and Meadowlands Pace. To learn more about how EPO Equine can help your equine athlete reach its true potential, contact Joe Valente at 215-501-6880 or visit EPOEquine.com. I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair, makers of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, here in North America, horsemen are protecting their horses with Flair strips. Are the strips benefiting horses in other parts of the world?
Mike, horsemen around the world use the strips to protect lung health. For example, South African Horse of the Year Variety Club regularly races with a strip. In South Africa, many graded stakes, including Grade 1 stakes, have been won in 2013 by horses wearing the strips. In New Zealand, Reigning Horse of the Year Mufasa races with a strip, as well as many thoroughbred and standardbred stakes winners in Singapore and Australasia this season.
To learn more, visit flairstrips.com.
RaceHorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RaceHorseReport.com. Make RaceHorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RaceHorseReport.com.
We'll be right back.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Basic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, a fun visit with Gary Hartledge in the first half of the program, and really looking forward to our next guest for the second half of the show, Andrew McKeever. We'll talk to Andrew in just a moment, but do want to remind you that the Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic Fall Yearling Sale is coming up September 30th. 390 yearlings by 150 sires represented in that sale. Always such a good sale. It is really, for a long time, been a place to buy quality yearlings from the tradition-rich Mid-Atlantic and East Coast breeding states. And you look at some of the graduates that have come out of that sale. Grade 1 Spinaway winner So Many Ways. Grade 2 Delaware Oaks winner Dancing of Fleet. Grade 2 Brooklyn Handicap winner Redeemed. And Grade 3 Dania Beach Stakes winner Mystic Love, all grads. And, Plum Pretty, Done Talking. The list goes on and on. It's a tremendous sale, Jude.
Yeah, it's a great sale. It's a great area, that part of Maryland, outstanding, and a place I always look forward to going to.
Make plans to be there September 30th, the Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic Fall Yearling Sale. Andrew McKeever has been training horses since 1995, a native of Ireland. He is conditioned 162 career winners, and really has been on upswing in recent years. And Andrew, nice enough to spend some time with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. Andrew, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thank you.
Happy to have you on board. And I mentioned that resurgence, or I guess the surgence that you've had, not really a resurgence, but you've really been on a roll over the past several years. It's been quite a run.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I just got a break, better horses make better trainers, I guess, you know.
Yeah, that's usually the way. You know, they say you can't make chicken salad out of you know what.
Yeah, that's what John Tolfan told me one day.
Well, Andrew, you and I go back a ways. We were barn mates many years ago at Santa Anita, and
right.
We had Gary Hartledge on. He's Red Dog, and you are Andrew the Bull. Tell us where that came from.
Oh, it actually came from California. You remember Chris Becker and Tom Halton? We watched a movie one day about a guy in Ireland, and he was called the Bull, and I was christened the Bull after that, and ever since I've been known as the Bull. So that's how it goes. Probably bullheaded. You know?
Do you like the nickname?
My father liked it anyway. I know that, so that was good enough for me. Yeah.
Well, how did Andrew McKeever become interested in horse racing?
Well, I grew up in Ireland, with my dad, and he ran the Curra Bloodstock Agency, which was a huge bloodstock agency over there, and just was born into it, with going to the races from the time I was a little child on. And I grew up on the Curra, which is like the Lexington of Ireland, I should say, you know. And just been involved all my life.
Were there certain people that you happened to, outside of your dad, I guess, I'm sure he had the biggest influence, but were there other people, sure, other trainers that you looked up to as a kid and said, I could do that someday?
Sure. Well, I worked for, in Ireland, I worked for Mick O'Toole and Desi Hughes, who were big trainers, very, famous trainers over there, just when I was in my school holidays. And then I worked for a big trainer in England called Peter Wallen, who had been champion trainer there for years. And then he's retired now, but he trained a horse called Grundy. He was one of the, you know, it was a famous horse years ago. And then I came over and worked for John Sullivan. And I went to Del Mar for the summer and decided I wanted to stay in America after that. Jude couldn't explain that why. I thought life was great there, you know, in Del Mar for the, you know, when I was just 17 or 18. So I just decided to come back then full time.
Yeah, Del Mar is a pretty special place, and you and I both have had some fun times down there.
Then I worked for, Bill Shoemaker for a while, and Neil Drysdale in California, and then Paco Gonzalez, and then John and Trudy gave me, you know, an opportunity to come out here with 8 or 10 horses as their private trainer, you know, when I first started training.
Andrew, Gary Hartledge told us in the first half of the program that being a horse trainer was all he ever wanted to do. Was it the same for you when you were growing up in Ireland, or did you have some other things that you tried along the way?
No, really, I just, that's all I ever really wanted to do, to be honest with you. Train horses, yeah.
Well, you've done it.
I realized I didn't have to study to be a trainer, so I stuck to trying to be a trainer.
Well, you don't really realize that you're studying at the time, but I know as you go through your career, you're always observing and paying attention. So there's a little bit more schooling to it than you think, although it may not be out of books. Talk about training for John Toffin and Trudy McCaffrey and their powerful stable. I mean, that was a great boost for your career, and they were some very influential people in our business.
Yeah, they were wonderful people, and they really spoiled me as a trainer, because they set me off as a private trainer, and you know, they took bad news well, and you know, it was just so easy to work for them. You didn't, you know, you just told them the truth, and life went on. And when I first started training, telling the truth to other people didn't really seem to work out so well. But anyway, after a while, it's always what I've done. But they just, you know, they were lucky. They were very lucky themselves, I suppose, to say that they had the start they had, you know, with the horses they bought. But as John Toffin always said, you make your own luck as well. But they had some very good horses. BNVN, Visible Gold, Nice Assay, Delmar Dennis, Old Dial, Came Home, Free House, you know, they were all super horses, and they enjoyed the game tremendously and were very good to me. Really, they're the people that gave me my biggest start in the game, you know.
Andrew, you use the term telling the truth. We don't want listeners to think that all trainers are out there lying to their clients and lying to people.
No,
that's not what you mean by that.
You don't want to be, I suppose when I first started training for other people, I was a little like, you know, well, the horse is no good, and people don't like to hear that, you know, or whatever, you know. You've got to say it in a nicer way. Maybe that's what I should have said.
But there are times when you have to break that kind of news to your owners, though, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's not an easy thing, you've got to communicate and tell them what's going on. But I think in the long run, as long as you're straight up with them, they'll respect you, you know, in the long run first.
Yeah, well, a lot of times people don't realize that their trainers are trying to help them, and it's for their own good. If you're spending a lot of money to keep a horse in training day after day, and the horse doesn't have any ability or isn't going to be able to compete on the circuit that you're at, then you've got to, you know, help them try to move on. And I know a lot of times people take no for an answer. They'll say, oh, give them one more shot, or try them long, or try them on the grass. And you know that they're just spinning their wheels, but you try to work with them. And of course that hurts your percentages and all that stuff. So, you know.
Sure. No. But when most of the people I work for now are very reasonable, and you know, I'm fortunate to have all, you know, mostly good paying, good people, good, really good clients. So I'm lucky at the present time, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's go back one minute, because this is a subject that came up several times during the Arlington Million, and let's talk about John Sullivan for a minute. He was a really great guy and a tremendous trainer, and I think a lot of what he did got lost in the shuffle, because at the tail end of his career, most of his clients had passed away and he didn't have much going on. But talk about John a minute.
Oh, he was just a really good, you know, just a really good horseman, and he had a way of getting a lot out of an average horse. He never gave up, you know. He kept on working with them and trying to, you know, get whatever he could. And just you're very fortunate. I was very fortunate to work under him and Paddy Gallagher and get it. You know, they gave me my introduction to the racetrack in America, and very lucky. And then, you know, like you say, he had two huge clients that both sort of gave up at the same time. So it kind of left him there with, you know, he suddenly went from a 30, 40 horse stable to 8 or 10 horses, you know, in a very short period of time, which was kind of a, you know, he never seemed to really able to get back from that, you know, till he passed away. But he just gave us all, he gave most of the Irish guys that came into California, he gave them all a chance somewhere down the road, gave them a job or did something to help them out, you know.
Andrew, we hear a lot of trainers on this program talk about the different elements that they take away from each person that they've worked with along the way. What are some of the things that you've taken from each of those people that you incorporate into your operation today?
Well, I think the most important thing, like, was basically tell the truth. Number one, that's the most important thing I learned from them, and be patient and give the, you know, let the, you know, be patient and let the horse develop in their own time. I've never been one to force horses, and you know, some people are very good with 2-year-olds, but I don't seem to have that talent. But patience and just do what's right by the horse, basically, is what I've learned from all the guys I worked for.
Who were the most patient people that you worked for?
When John Sullivan was very patient with horses, and Shoemaker was very patient with horses, and Paco Gonzalez was very, you know, he gave the horses all the time, which we, you know, he had the luxury of having John and Trudy, you know, abiding by his word the whole time, so that helped, but he was very patient, you know, he never rushed young horses, he always gave them a chance, you know.
Paddy Gallagher, your old friend, was telling me yesterday that Shoemaker told him one time, Whittingham, when he had a horse that could run a little bit, he'd get anxious because he'd want to bet on him, and he'd tell Shoemaker, you know, this one can really run, this one can really run, and Shoemaker said that he had to give Charlie $300 of his own money to bet on him, just so Charlie would think it was a go, and then Shoemaker would take him back and give him a race.
Oh yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Paddy was going on about it yesterday, and you know, that's the kind of those guys, they were all classics, and you know, John Sullivan.
Yeah, well, Shoemaker was unique, like, for that, and I could tell you a lot of stories, the stories he told us over the years, and that, and they were a classic, probably the best team of all, you know. Charlie and Shu were probably the classiest success team I've ever been around, you know, with the huge amount of success they had. They seemed to stay normal all the way through it. Never changed who they were. They were always very, graceful with their success, I thought. So yeah. I was very fortunate to be around people like that, you know.
One of the things that I think you're very good at is your opinion of a horse. And I know anytime you've told me, this dates back to my first time in Kentucky. I went to Churchill Downs before Keeneland was interviewing trainers, and you told me about a horse, and sure enough, she won and paid $25. And in the last 12 years, anytime you've told me, you know, watch for this one or that one, they always seem to win. You have a very, very good opinion, and a lot of trainers aren't like that. What do you attribute that to?
Maybe good luck. I don't know.
You're too modest.
Yeah, good luck. I don't know. We're right and wrong a lot of times, you know. But you never really know until the latch opens and they run, do you? You know. But definitely, some horses show a little bit more than others, or you know, show that they've got the class for the business, you know.
Talking with trainer Andrew McKeever on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Andrew, you mentioned that 2-year-olds and bringing young horses along, maybe not necessarily your strength. Is that a different philosophy when you're training 2-year-olds? Is that why?
Well, I'd say I take them along fine, but basically what I was trying to say is they don't seem to win first time out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
no matter whether they're training good or bad, and then they seem to get good. That seems to be something that I've noticed about myself for a while anyway.
Yeah,
but,
is that...
I don't know why. But then I've heard all that. I heard a lot of people saying Paco Gonzalez couldn't train two-year-olds there when I worked for him. And the year I came back to Kentucky, he won about 5 two-year-old stakes that year. So he quenched that complaint. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of it's to do with horses. But you can, you know, some trainers win with them early and they do really well with them, and that's their forte. Where other trainers, they have a, you know, you hear of Bill, even Bill Mott and Shug McGahee, two of the best trainers on the East Coast, but they're renowned for not winning with their two-year-olds first time out, aren't they? And then they seem to develop from there, the horses.
If you had to put your finger on one thing and say, okay, this is my forte, this is what Andrew McKeever does extremely well, as good as anybody or better than anybody, what would that be?
I train a good horse. That's easy.
You are way too modest. You know that?
I train a good horse because it's easy. That's what I think. I think the horses do all the work for you, really. They should get most of the credit.
Well, that is true.
I suppose being patient and giving them, and developing them and putting them in the right spots to keep them confident, you know.
Well, you can train a good horse. Obviously, Daisy Devine certainly a tribute to your program and your patience. She was not a instant success, but what a tremendous mare she's turned out to be.
Oh, she's fantastic, and she was a little when she first came in. Now she was a little crazy and a terrible worrier and that, and she's just turned into a super horse. And I didn't, to be honest with you, I knew she was a nice filly, but I didn't think she, you know, as a two-year-old, I wouldn't envision what she's done now, But that was there when I ran. Everyone asked me why I ran her from maiden 30. Well, that was because she was a very nervous kind of filly, you know, and worked well in the morning. But I thought in my mind she needed to win a race early on in her career to keep her confidence, or she might have got, if she had got disheartened, I think it wouldn't have been good for her early on in her career, you know?
So as a horse trainer, it's not only about the physical aspect of training these horses. You have to be somewhat of a psychiatrist, too, and working with their mental state?
Oh, I think if they're not, it doesn't matter how good they are, if they're not content walking over to run for you, they're not going to run well for you. It's the same as taking a little child to school. If he hates going to that school, even if he's a good student, he's not going to perform for you in the school if he's not content. They've got to be happy, or if they're not happy, they're not going to give you, what they can do physically. You know, I don't think. I think a mental thing is very important with a horse.
Yeah,
as well as the physical.
There's no question about it. And when you have a smaller stable like you have, you have the time to devote to those horses. And people don't realize that horse trainers are thinking all the time, day and night, about their horses and how they can, tweak their schedule or what they can do to make them more comfortable. And that filly, you've just done a tremendous job with her.
Yeah, well, she's a very good filly, but she's just one day. Obviously, she probably did better with a smaller outfit than a very large outfit, because she might have just got lost in the shuffle a little bit with that, So I guess that's the benefit of having horses with someone with not such a huge number,
Yeah.
So, Andrew, what things do you do with a horse that has some issues mentally like that and trying to overcome them? What are some of the things you do maybe in the mornings?
I was fortunate that she was at Keeneland, where I was based, where I'm based now. And, that gives you a lot more options than a lot of racetracks, because, you've got a little pen where you can turn horses out. You know where it is on Rice Road there. There's a lot of places you can take a horse for a good long walk. Instead of having to be on the racetrack every day, you can, hack around the paddock in the back there or something. So it gives the horse a little chance to relax instead of the constant pressure of the racetrack every day. and she handled that very well. And then she went to New Orleans, which is kind of a tough place on a horse, but if they can handle that in the winter, they can deal with anything probably, you know, because it's just got one racetrack there and it's kind of busy all the time. So by the time she got there, though, she'd matured enough to be able to deal with that, you know. But Keeneland's got a little country atmosphere, you know. You can be fiddle around with a horse there and do them more than just actually deal with them on the racetrack every day because of the surroundings there, you know. So
yeah, between the training track and the little turf areas,
and you can go gallop, and then there's a long little trail ride you can go on, and you know, you can turn horses out up there behind the barn and stuff like that. So it's you know, it's a very good place to have horses, I think.
Outside of Daisy Divine, who are some of the other horses that have come through your barn that you're always going to remember?
Well, I had a horse called Diamond Tycoon that won three races down in New Orleans. He won I think it was a turf race. It was not the fair. It was the Fairgrounds Handicap, I think the name of the race. It was a Group 3. He was a freaky good horse, probably, you know, as good a horse as I've ever been around or will be around, I'm sure. He was just exceptional. He broke his maiden in England as a 3-year-old first time out, and he was made set third choice for the 2,000 guineas off his maiden win. And then things went wrong for him in England, and he didn't like traveling, shipping, so he did very well with me in America because he could just be led over to run, didn't have to ship anywhere. And it's unfortunate he bowed his tendon after his last start here, and I think he could have been any type of horse if he hadn't have done that. And there's been a few others. There's a little horse I trained for John and Trudy that he didn't achieve a whole lot. He won, I think, went through his conditions, and that was it, called Coast of Maine a long time ago, but he was just a special little horse to me because he tried so hard. I think he was second about 17 times, and I think he was beaten by three or four horses that went on to win Group 1s. You know, and Pat Day and Craig Perrett both told me he was the hardest trying horse they'd ever ridden in their lives, so that was a pretty big statement. So he's a horse that always meant a lot to me, and that was when I first started training for John and Trudy.
You know, a lot of times the famous horses get all the ink, but the trainers know the ones that really are the overachievers or the ones that they did their best work with. Who would you rank as the horse you've done your best work with?
Well, that little horse Coast of Maine, because he probably outran his ability every time he ran. You know, he only won three or four or five races, but he just kept showing up, and he wasn't particularly sound, but he just kept on grinding it out, you know. And then I suppose Daisy Divine, she's, you know, considering what she's achieved, was a pretty good achievement, just considering the fact that she was a little she was quite awkward early on, you know.
Trainer Andrew McKeever, our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fazit Tipton here on HRRN. Andrew, having started training in the mid-90s, is your approach to training horses maybe a little bit more modern than some of the other trainers out there? Is that safe to say?
No, I wouldn't. I'd say I'm more the other way.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, me, personally.
How so?
I just think of it, you know, I learned from, you know, I came up under the, as Jude will tell you, I came up under Paco and Shoemaker and Neil Drysdale, and that was all the, you know, they were all sort of Charlie Whittingham school people, and they you know, they stuck to the basics with horses. So that would be my outlook, I think.
Yeah, well, that's the old school.
I'm not the sort of modern day guy reading the Ragusan sheets every day or anything like that, you know.
It has the training game changed over the years? Is it a more modern type of game?
Yeah, I think a lot. And there's a lot of guys that are very successful doing that, you know. You know, they read off numbers and stuff like that, and they win a lot of races because of it. But it's not the way I'd be more sort of a hands-on, you know, trying to, you know, just working with the horses the whole time and, you know. That would be my approach anyway, you know.
You tailor your program to the horse rather than have the horse follow your style.
Sure, I wouldn't have an actual set work schedule for horses, really. I've just let, you know, basically when they're ready to breeze is when I breeze them and stuff like that, so, yeah.
Andrew, so many trainers on the program over the past year or so on this particular show have credited the clients that they've worked with over the years as being an integral part of their success. So talk about some of the clients that you've been involved with that have really helped you along the way.
Yeah, well, John and Trudy are, you know, first and foremost, because they gave me my start, and they were just wonderful. You know, you can't say anything. And then I've trained for, you know, a lot of really good people over the years. I've got horses for, like, Castleton Lions right now, who are great outfit, and I train horses for Flaxman. Holdings are very good and, you know, very patient with the horse. I've trained horses for Robert Clay and Three Chimneys. They've been just ultra easy to work for, and just ultra do what's right by the horse and you'll be successful. And also Lincoln Collins has been a great help to me with some of his clients. And, you know, all good people are all, you know, pay their bills and really leave you alone to do your job. And that's where you seem, where I've been successful when I've been left alone to my own devices, you know.
Yeah, there's an old saying that the trainer is always right.
Yeah, well, he's not always, but, you know.
So. Well, you never want to argue with your trainer.
Clients. Like, there's very few I could actually say that I'd have a bitter taste in my mouth whether I work for them or not anymore. Very few, you know.
So on the times that you're not at the racetrack, Andrew, what are some of the things you like to do in your off time, so to speak?
I don't really have much of a, to be honest with you. I'm not a golfer or a fisherman or anything. Most of my life seems to be revolved around the racetrack, you know. I've got a little son, my son Chance, that do quite well. I try and do as much with him as I can, but he generally ends up at the racetrack with me. That's what happens. So,
and he probably loves that too.
He does sometimes, and sometimes he doesn't. You know,
how old is
he's
Chance?
He's a bit like me. He's a little bull-headed.
How old is Chance?
Churchill, the Outriser, Churchill call him Little Bull.
Little Bull.
The Little Bull. Yeah. How old is the Little Bull, Andrew?
Little Bull is he's 10 years of age.
Does he want to be a horse trainer?
Here in Lexington, he's quite a character.
Does he want to be a horse trainer?
He has a very he definitely have a big interest, you know, and his on and off is, you know, I don't know. I hope he doesn't. I hope he's smart enough and gets a real job. Makes a decent living. So, but whatever he wants to do, but I wouldn't be forcing it down his throat, I can tell you that.
Well, Andrew, this has really been an enjoyable visit. Hard to believe that we are just about out of time, but want to say thank you for taking the time to be with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. All of our guests who appear on the show will receive a gift from our sponsors, EPO Equine, our man Joey Diamond. He will take care of you with that product, and Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Dr. Jim Chiappetta will send that out to you ASAP,
well,
my friend.
You.
And thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
See you later, Andrew.
All right, Andrew McKeever here on Trainer Talk. What a fun show. A couple of great guests.
Great.
Gary Hartledge in the first half, Andrew McKeever here in the second half.
Both named after animals.
Yeah. Red Dog and the Bull.
Oh, there you go. We can use that on Twitter.
Red Dog and the Bull. I didn't know that about Andrew, by the way.
You never heard that before?
No, I did not know that about Andrew.
Well, I've known Andrew, well, he said 95, but I think even before that. So it's been quite a while, but we've been friends a long time. He's a fantastic guy and an excellent trainer. And as you can tell, a guy that loves the game.
Don't forget, if you missed any of this show or any of our Trainer Talk shows, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Listen to a podcast at your leisure. All of our shows are available for you there. Of course, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes as well. We're back tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern Time. This show from 6 to 7 will be the Brisnet.com call-in show, your chance to call in and talk racing with us. And then on Friday, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, and from 6 to 7, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. Saturday, it's the Equine Forum from 8 to 10 a.m. So a lot of things to look forward to on a busy week here on HRN.
And the Keeneland Seal.
Oh, yeah. Going well, by
going
the way.
Well, going crazy.
Very well. $8 million horses through the first two sessions.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Outstanding. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four, I am Mike Penna, and we will talk to you next time here on HRN. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Good night, Barbados.